Focus with Jessica Strutt on ABC Radio Perth.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus. I hope you had a wonderful long weekend. It was beautiful weather, a little hot. For those of us who are adults, the idea of being a kid in the world today seems a little bit foreign. If you're like me, perhaps even a little bit scary. Technology is reshaping our lives and our interactions, and it's hard to know what the future will look like. So how do we help young people who are navigating all the highs and lows of those years where your hormones are going crazy and you're trying to work out who you are? How to talk to your children about uncomfortable yet fundamentally important topics? That's our focus today.
This is Focus with Jessica Strutt on ABC Radio Perth.
And my guest today is Colette Smart. She's a psychologist, she's a teacher, she's a mother of three. And I'm thinking she's an optimist, judging by the book she's written. It's called They'll Be Okay, and it's a guide for parents with tips on how to do it best. She's also happy to take your call, so give us a bell, 1-300-222-720, or send us a text, 0437-922-720. Good morning, Colette.
Good morning, Jessica.
Are you optimistic about our kids? Do you really think they will be okay?
I really am. I've worked with young people around the world, everywhere I go, whether it's Zimbabwe or South Africa, or I was in the US the end of last year. Young people are pretty similar everywhere I go. And I really do have hope for this generation. I've been working with teenagers in particular for more than 20 years, and I love teenagers, and there's no punchline after that. I genuinely love them. I find them so enthusiastic. They're not afraid to question, which can be tricky at times, but they just, they really are willing to have a go in this world. And that so many of them are good mates. They want to make wise decisions. Obviously, some of them are really struggling, so there's no denying that. But generally, I just love working with young people. And, yep, I have hope for this generation.
That's good. I'm sure a lot of parents out there today have just had a huge sigh of relief. I've never been a parent to teenagers, but I was one, and I grew up in a family with lots of kids. And I remember my teenage years, and from reading your book, it sounds like teenagers today are pretty different to my generation. How do they differ?
So in some ways, they're still similar. So struggling with body image, much like we did, lots of self-esteem issues, the same kind of things we struggled with. But where there's a difference for them and for us as parents is the obvious, this whole digital realm that is 24/7 constant, that they never have a chance really to be off or switch off or escape the analysis. And so that is something tricky. I say to parents, look, every generation has had their thing to deal with. You know, there's actually some interesting, funny stories about the time when fiction came around, and, you know, that was apparently going to destroy a generation of young people's brains. So, you know, when we were young, it was TV. So this is the new thing, and it's okay. We've just got to learn how to navigate this a bit better.
What about in terms of, I'm thinking back to my teenage years and what school was like, heavy drinking, quite a bit of sexual activity amongst, you know, kids that I went to school with. There's been a bit of a swing away from that, though?
Absolutely. So there's fascinating research that's come out of the US, but it actually looks at Finland, Japan, the US, and they looked at about 8 million teenagers between, and they analyzed data between 1976 and 2016. And what they've noticed is that young people are having fewer sexual partners and starting to have sex or engage in sexual behavior later than their parents' generation. So, and this is between year nine and year 12, or ninth and 12th graders. So they are making better decisions in terms of delay or delaying sexual activity for various reasons than we did. They're also binge drinking less than we did. There's more teetotalers, actually. The UK is not doing that well. They're doing a bit better than previous generations. But generally in Europe and particularly Australia, they are trying to make better decisions around alcohol than we did. So there are improvements. They are actually doing better than we did in many areas.
In some areas. That's good to hear. Yeah. Look, it's 10 past 10. You're listening to Jess Strutt. We're on the Focus program. And today we're very lucky to be joined by Colette Smart. She's got a new book. It's called They'll Be Okay. She's a psychologist, a teacher. She's a mother of three. And she's talking about ways to, I suppose, have some of those difficult conversations with your children, which we will get to shortly. But at the moment, we're just looking at teenagers today and how they might differ from when you grew up or when I grew up. And I'm interested as well, you know, things like different messaging that we get. You know, when I was a teenager, smoking was cool. It's not anymore, is it?
No, yeah, true. I mean, I remember when I first started teaching, even the teachers smoked in the staff room. It was just, you know, it's kind of what happened. There's been a big swing away from that, and teenagers in particular are, you know, they understand more about the health risks of that. We also know more about teenage brains, and teenagers are more aware of that as well. Generally around the world, we're actually going to Europe as a family in July, August to do my launch into the Europe. But my younger kids were interested because they had thought, oh, well, in Europe, you know, you can have a sip of alcohol. And we said, actually, not anymore. They've also raised the drinking age in many countries there. So, yeah, so teenagers are doing different things because I think we're more aware of the research.
So tell me some of the biggest factors that are changing the way kids are experiencing those teenage years. I mean, you touched on one. Technology is obviously one of the big ones.
Yep. So technology, with technology and them being switched on all the time, I mentioned body image, they really are faced or bombarded with these supposedly acceptable body types for boys and for girls. And boys in particular, we've come to realize that boys are struggling with body image as much as girls are and ever were. We always think of body image as a girl's issue, but boys struggle with the whole six-pack idea and the broad shoulders and the different athletic builds that are supposedly supposed to be what boys are supposed to have. But really, we're seeing in the UK, boys are actually quite shocked when they did a survey. Boys were quite shocked at how much men's and boys' bodies were changed in media. They'd often thought it was only women's bodies that were changed. So that's something that we can really help our young people with in realizing how much pressure there is on them to measure up to some unrealistic standard.
I've got Colette Smart with me. She's an author, she's a teacher, and she's a mother of three. And she's talking to us today about, I suppose, parenting teenagers through those difficult years and how different things are now to perhaps when we grew up. If you've got a question for her, maybe there's an issue at home that's been bugging you, you're not too sure exactly how to raise it with your teenager, give us a call, 1-300-222-720, or send us a text, 0437-922-720. She's here to give you some advice. We've already got a couple of texts in. Katie on the text says, how do you get teenage boys to speak in full sentences? I'm worried he will only ever communicate in grunts. Yep, I think we've all seen a bit of that. Colette, have you got any advice there?
So really what's happening, I mean, we know about the whole teenage brain. We're seeing more and more, it's becoming more common knowledge how the brain is changing. One expert said we should actually have an under construction sign plastered on their foreheads during their teenage years, because genuinely there's a whole lot of change and synapses that are rerouting and being cut off that aren't being used. And so some of their language, there is genuinely a delay in actually getting some of their thoughts out because their brain is under construction until mid-20s. However, my advice also, something I say in the book is our kids are actually always communicating with us, whether it's through body language or things they're not saying, that there's always some way our kids communicate. Some children are also different. Some teens will, you know, chat about any topic on the driveway for the whole neighborhood to hear. And others will do like a once a month download at 5 to midnight. It's not better or worse. Teenagers just communicate at different times. But you do find once they, my eldest is now out of school, and once they come out of that period, you do find there's a lot more discussion that happens more freely. So yes, they don't grunt forever.
Technology isn't just changing what they're exposed to, but which we've touched on, but it is changing the way they interact and the way that they're entertained and their job prospects. What do you see there?
So I'm always it makes me frustrated when I hear people saying this generation is doomed because of technology. They don't know how to communicate. That's actually not true.
I better stop saying that then. I'm terrible. I'm learning something new every day doing this show, Colette. Thank you.
That's great. So they actually are communicating. They still communicate well verbally. They just have an additional way of communicating. It's not worse. Yes, sometimes they do text each other even when sitting next to each other, but it's not doing away with communication completely. There will be some teens who will withdraw, and that is not healthy. So they certainly are. That's why we have boundaries around technology and helping our young people have breaks from their phones, making sure they're exercising and socializing face-to-face and eating dinner as families without technology at the table. We do have those boundaries because it is easier to gravitate towards your phone. And those that are depressed or anxious, we find that many of them will go or gravitate towards their phone even more, almost as a crutch or a safe place. But really, some young people, we're finding kids on the spectrum, they can find groups and communities online that they don't find offline. So it's not to just let them live online. They must learn to interact face-to-face and day-to-day with people, but it just gives them another avenue. So technology isn't bad. And just because your child takes a selfie, that doesn't mean they're a narcissist. I actually see it as an amazing way of young people communicating facial expression and body language. We gave them such a hard time. You know, some years ago, people were saying, well, young people are only going to be able to communicate through text or through emojis. Mm. But actually, what they're trying to do with their Snapchat when they're sending a snap is convey what their face is saying through words. I mean, how many of us have had our text misconstrued because somebody misinterpreted what we meant? The selfie is a way for many of them to try and show what they are implying in their written text. So it's not all bad.
It's 17 minutes past 10. You're listening to Jess Strutt on the Focus program, where I'm talking to Colette Smart. She has just published a new book's been published. It's looking at essentially how to best parent teenagers through those difficult years. I read it over the weekend, and look, as I said, I learnt a lot. I am someone who does, I suppose, criticise the younger generation quite a lot, particularly that selfie stuff. I don't get it. I'm not a big fan. So thank you for enlightening me, Colette. If you've got a question, give us a call, 1-300-222-720, or send us a text, 0437-922-720. We've got a text in from Jen, who actually is giving us some advice and other parents some advice. I like this one. Think carefully when you ask a question as a parent. Make sure it can't be answered with only a yes, a no, or a grunt. Thanks, Jen. That's actually probably a good point.
I love that. Yes, I love that, Jen. Thank you for saying that. That's actually very true. It's really helpful to actually ask open-ended questions so that they have to give you some kind of an answer, not a yes or no. I love that. Thanks, Jen.
And I think the thing is as well, I mean, that's just learning, you know, isn't it? It's learning how to communicate with them better rather than always blaming them. And I think that we can quickly get into that blame game with teenagers. Oh, they're all the same, you know.
Yes.
We hear it all the time. Let's look at, you know, some more specific parenting advice. And we've had a good look there, a snapshot of what, you know, today's teenagers are like, and you're optimistic. Hopefully everyone else out there is listening in now, and they are too. What's the most important thing in your mind that a parent can actually impart onto their children?
I think it all begins with your relationship with them, and that comes out of, you know, communication. That's why my book's called 15 Conversations. It's not called 15 Lectures, because conversations involve listening, being open to your children's opinions. I'm not saying your children rule the home and decide on, you know, all the boundaries and the rules and how to spend the finances, but it's being open to maybe as a parent sometimes getting things wrong. So saying sorry a lot is very important to teach your kids that it's okay to get things wrong and apologize and try and do better next time. And so part of our relationship, really my whole book boils down to relationship with kids. And what does relationship look like? Relationship looks like having family values. And your family values is where a lot of your conversations come from. Sitting at the dinner table and talking about bullying or your online behaviors or how you treated your siblings comes out of your values, which could be kindness or courage or justice, whatever yours are. And then relationship looks like your kids being part of the family and doing chores and being, you know, expecting them to sit down at meals with you. It sounds so simple, but really so much of the research, there's research that I talk about with values and so on, some those basic things that we take for granted, that is where relationship is built in our homes with our kids. So if we just keep going back to the basics and knowing why we're following through. So I talk about a parenting mantra, yeah. And I say, my parenting mantra is parent with your child's future adult in mind. And really what that is when I'm making decisions today about sitting at the dinner table or what my values are or setting a boundary around technology, why am I doing that? Because I care about who this future adult is going to become that's sitting across from me at the breakfast table today. And so, yeah, I think that's it all comes down to some of the basic things that we do to help build a future adult who's ethical.
We'll get to more of that in a moment, the parenting mantra, because I did find that really fascinating. And that was, you know, very much a part of my life growing up in terms of the values instilled in home. So a lot of this stuff is, as you said, old-fashioned values. We've got a fantastic text in, though, so I want to go to it from Jane. And she's seeking some advice from you, Colette. My daughter's 17-year-old boyfriend shows up to pick her up in his car, doesn't come in to say hello to us. Brackets, we're not scary people. Yeah, sure, Jane, sure. I've tried talking to her about it and I see it as a sign of disrespect. Am I overthinking it? She's now a little oppositional when I try and raise it. It's a really good one and certainly one I remember from growing up. What was your advice there, Colette?
So I have a section on dating in the book where I talk about, particularly when you've got younger teens, you can have a little bit more say. I prefer group dates around there because the research talks about there being fewer benefits for really young dating relationships. Mm-hmm. As they get older, there are more benefits. But around 17, it is getting tricky because you're teenagers are really trying to show their independence. They're trying to be assertive and show that they're different from you. And so I think you're speaking out, Jane, and saying this is not really something that we find respectful in our home. I'm a little disappointed. She knows that now. I think your relationship with your daughter gets to a point where it's more important than fighting some of the smaller battles. And you know, I do agree that it's disrespectful, but it may be the lesser battle to pick with her, perhaps, and just keep instilling in your relationship with her, keep connecting with her. Because I think if you continually criticize her boyfriend, you may push her away more and more. So it's just trying to find, it's almost like a dance. You've got to find the balance between telling your older teenager the areas you aren't happy with. But if they're not changing and you're seeing them become oppositional with it, you risk risk pushing her away a bit more. So she knows that now. And I would just try and instill, other or invest in other areas of your relationship with her rather than push her away. I don't think you're wrong, but your relationship with your daughter is more important than the boyfriend getting out the car at this stage.
Another one here, it's anonymous though, this one on the text, but what do you do, and it's another 17-year-old, this time a son. What do I do with a 17-year-old son entering his final year of school who is totally unmotivated? He doesn't want to do schoolwork. He just wants to lounge about. That's pretty familiar too, that one.
Yes, it is. Look, that's absolutely not unfamiliar territory to me, as a psychologist. What happens is, I think young people, young boys more often, teenage boys, get into this final year and it becomes enormous. The pressure for them to perform is huge.
It's they over also, the top, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I can't stand it. And they look ahead and their world, they're actually quite afraid, I've discovered, when once they enter their final year, particularly if they're not sure what they want to do.
And who would be?
I mean, who would? Absolutely. Who
I still don't know what I'm going to do when I grow up, Colette. I have no idea.
And that's the thing. I mean, I changed careers. I started out in teaching. I loved my teaching, but fell in love with psychology along the way and then became a psychologist. So there's so much change going to happen. And I think, again, I always go on about relationships, but it's really just investing in your relationship with your child. I find many teenagers at that age, the more you try and push them, the more they withdraw. And for me, there's so much mental health concern in those final years. My concern is teenagers really struggling worse with their mental health. I'd rather them just get through, finish the year, even if it's kind of average or questionable. They will discover their path. And it's hard as the parent. I'm not pretending it's not. It's very hard as the parent watching your child when you think they're making poor choices or poor decisions in their final year. But for some of them, it's their only way of coping. And just know they will find their path once they've finished. I see it all the time. They do. They really do find their path afterwards.
It's 26 minutes past 10. The news headlines are coming up. You're with Jess Strutt on the Focus program, where I'm joined today by Colette Smart. She's a psychologist, a teacher, a mother of three. She's got a new book called They'll Be Okay. I found it a great read, and I don't even have children, particularly teenage children I've never raised. And I read it on the weekend, and I learnt a lot, but it also reminded me of some of the good things I had growing up in terms of, I suppose, those family values that you're talking about, things, just simple things. Like, we've got a text in here with someone saying, don't sugarcoat the massive younger generational problem here. They've got no rules, no respect. No discipline, anything goes, you know, a product of the socialist left. I mean, it's an interesting text because you're basically saying it's actually completely the opposite of that, that, you know, really that there is always these generational issues with teenagers,
yes.
whether it's technology or, you know, books, and that it's, you know, going back to those old family values, the old values that we had of sitting down at the dinner and being connected, it's pretty basic stuff that we need to use.
Yes, and I mean, if you look at, I think we can look back at past generations with rose-coloured glasses. You know, there was so much hidden domestic violence happening. I mean, it's still, obviously, we know it's a big issue, but before, you know, women couldn't speak about it. You know, teenage pregnancy issues were huge and shameful. And, you know, I've quoted already the statistics on sex, how young people are delaying sexual activity later than we are. So it's not just an opinion or a rosy opinion. There are many areas they're doing well and making great choices. And, you know, obviously, like every generation, whether, you know, it was the DuckTales in generations past or the bikies or whatever, you always have groups of teenagers in every generation who are rebellious or go out and do crazy stuff. Of course, there are those groups in this generation, but so many young people, I work in schools around the country and around the world, and so many young people are just really doing beautiful stuff, and they really care about their environment, they care about their friends. I really am positive and not just, you know, in a rosy way. I meet thousands of young people and they are wonderful people to speak to if we just actually sit down and take the time to hear and think and be open to what they have to say.
I do like how they're so informed in terms of, I mean, obviously it helps having the internet, but I find their political activism and whatnot and being involved in issues that confront them,
yes.
Global, you know, global warming, climate change, I actually find that really fascinating. I think they're much more politically minded and,
yes.
I get a bit sick of adults being so apathetic about what's happening. And so
yes.
I find that really, really interesting. Let's talk a little bit about that really difficult chat that my colleague and I had earlier just around the birds and the bees, the sex chat. Yes. And it is always really difficult. And one of the things I loved about your book is you talked about the fact that it's not a one-off conversation. It's not just about having the sex talk and you go in and you have it really swiftly, but it's actually about having a chat about love and, you know, a longer chat. Can you talk us through that? How do you get to that position?
So there's Harvard research that talks about young people. They surveyed thousands of young people and they said, we are so tired of hearing about disaster prevention. Don't get pregnant, don't get a girl pregnant, don't get an STI, and kind of case closed. And we hear the biology of stuff or the mechanics of stuff, and no one's teaching us about relationships. No one's teaching us about, in their words, they said, we want to know about love education. Teach us about love. What is, and the young people said, most of us have never sat down with a parent or an adult and actually had a conversation about what it means to be an ethical person in a relationship. And so, you know, then we're all surprised when they make ridiculous decisions, but we have never sat down with them and actually spoken to them about the difference between love and lust and like and making sure you can read someone's body language, knowing that, you know, sexual intimacy actually takes trust and time. All those conversations are not one-off. And, you know, the whole idea in past generations of sitting down to have the talk, there is no one talk. It's lots of small talks over your child's lifetime into their journey to adulthood, from tiny children when they learn how to say the correct terms for their genitalia, mm-hmm. and being comfortable saying that as a parent, all the way to love and sex and the issue with pornography for this generation. We talk about that to teenagers. I say to parents, don't feel bad if you've messed up a conversation. It's okay. Your kids aren't going to remember one conversation that you've messed up. They are going to remember that their whole relationship, that you were open, that they could come to you with any topics, even though they were awkward. It's okay to feel awkward. Our generation didn't speak about these things to our parents. So, of course, it's awkward for us. We've got to learn how to do it better. And young people are saying we feel more comfortable than our parents talking about this, about sex. So really, it's the adults who have to step up into the space, not the teenagers.
This is Focus with Jessica Strutt on ABC Radio Perth.
Yeah, that's right. You are with Jess Strutt and it is Focus. And today we are talking everything teenagers. And I'm very pleased to be joined by Colette Smart, psychologist, teacher, mother of three. And she's got a book, They'll Be Okay. She's very optimistic about the future of our teenagers and how we parent them. You were talking before about how it's that Colette, I suppose, we need to get over ourselves as parents because the sex education we had, I know in my family, we didn't talk about it much. And I know when I was at school, a lot of kids would turn to, you know, the Dolly magazine, these magazines to get it. Now, of course, they can go on the internet and find whatever they want. Mm. So it is a lot about parents getting over themselves and not letting their own uptightness about this issue and what they experienced get in the way of their parenting.
Yeah, and being honest about that, saying to your kids, I never had these conversations with my parents because it was a different generation. I've even said to my kids, my mum thought she was dying at the sight of her first period because her mother didn't even discuss that with her. So generations are having to change and get better in dealing with this. But because of the online world that our kids are exposed to, they're exposed to things way earlier than some of them are developmentally ready for. And so we absolutely must be having these conversations before Google does. And really, teenagers have actually said, a lot of what I'm saying is not just opinion. So much of this comes out of research, mm-hmm. where teenagers have said, we regard our parents as our sexuality role models way above our peers. And so that flies in the face of everything we think about teenagers. So that's not to say they're not going to look embarrassed or feel awkward, or you're not going to feel awkward. We will, and you will. You just have to push through the awkwardness and say things like, you know, I never had these conversations with my parents, but this is so important, and I've come across certain things that I know your generation is exposed to, and I really, you know, teenagers actually say that they realize their parents have more accurate information. They know their friends are tuning into the same broken sources as they are. So yeah, they do want to hear from sources that are genuine and have real information.
Yeah, lived experience, I suppose.
Yes.
You talk about, you know, you touched on it. You talk about in the book the love talk and rather than the sex talk, the one-off sex talk, and that the conversation we should be having is more about how to be loved and how to really love and respect someone else, and relationship intelligence, teaching them to be worthy of love and lovable. How do you encourage sort of self-respect and that develops into, you know, other respect? Talk us through that.
So my book's divided into two sections where you've mentioned children need to know that they are love worthy. Mm-hmm. So they learn they are love worthy through their relationships with us, how their parents treat them. Girls, how their dads or male family members treat them can be very powerful in learning what to accept from other men, treatment of other men in their lives. Children learn that they have dignity, they have worth. The way we talk to boys about their emotions in less traditionally stereotypical ways, where we allow boys to express their sadness or their fears in appropriate ways rather than just anger. That's usually the emotion we kind of always allow with boys. They just explode when actually they're feeling afraid or sad about something. And then teaching children also that they are love able. So how do we talk to them about caring for their animals, caring for their grandma or their siblings, or being respectful? That's why I have a chapter on manners, because I think it comes down to the basics of how you treat other people around you with politeness or kindness. When you say thank you, it actually demonstrates I recognize that you actually did something for me and I appreciate it. So, and then obviously all of this comes down to modeling. How do we model self-respect? How do we talk about our own bodies? How do we allow people to treat us? But how do we treat other people in front of our children? And so that really teaches, through their lived experience, children learn about self-respect and other respect.
An issue that is very difficult, and one that probably wasn't around so much, I think, during probably our time, is yes, porn, and it's a growing issue. It's sort of, I mean, in a sense, isn't it? It's the smoking and the drinking of the other generations. Yes. And you include some interesting insights in the book. You use a quote, and you say that the kids now, they don't have to find it; it'll find them. And we've just got a text in with someone asking for some advice around this. And Rachel says, "Porn is so readily available to teenagers. I doubt that I can control what my son, 13, is or will be exposed to. So how do I prepare him for that and try to get him to understand that porn bears no resemblance to real life?" And this is a big issue, and I reckon there'll be a lot of mums and dads racing over to the radio right now to turn the volume up on this one.
So there's quite a few areas that I tackle in my chapter on this, and knowing that your child will be exposed. We are seeing more and more 8 and 9 year old children being exposed accidentally to this. It's not the first or the one or two exposures that are the problem. We talk to our children about, once you've been exposed, what are your choices then after that? Are you choosing to seek it out more, watch it more, engage with it more? And then talking to young people about the destructiveness of porn. I do lots of seminars for young people, and I talk to them about how porn is opposite to love. You know, if they want to learn to fight for love or learn what love is and true intimacy is, if they're watching porn, they're actually learning the opposite. They're learning to be a bad lover. And, you know, I've got a list of very quick statistics in easy language that you could use with your kids on how we're seeing more and more boys struggling with erectile dysfunction problems, older teenagers and young adults. Mm-hmm. Men. And boys sit up and take notice when they hear that, because they realize, wow, this could actually affect me biologically. And then we talk to them about how it affects their brains. So we talk to them about how porn is a poisonous script. it teaches you a script that you almost learn about intimacy, that this is what I should do, this is what I should like, and that's not actual true intimacy. That's not what another partner that you're with might even enjoy. Then we also don't shame our kids, because when they are exposed, many of them feel confused for the first time. There are many responses that could be normal. You know, there could be excitement, confusion, revulsion, all wrapped in one. And we talk them through that, and then we say, you're not dirty or bad for having a physical response the first time or the first, you know, when you see it. But again, we come back to choices and the distorted messages that it's teaching you. And then I actually have a whole way of how we can respond when we first hear or see that our child has been exposed, because it's a shock. I don't think any parent is really ever ready when they realize that it's happened in their home.
So of course you're not going to be able to read the full chapter, but go on. I mean, how would you instance when it's first?
Sure. So really what I talk about is I say breathe, and I say no, yes, really breathe. But then I actually break the word down, the word breathe down into different areas, and I say to them, be ready. So read as much as you can, find out as much as you can about how to talk about this topic so that when it happens, you're ready. Then when your child is exposed, you reassure them. Like I've said, you don't tell them they're dirty or bad or evil. You say you knew this day was going to come, and now we're going to deal with it. Expect your child to have some denials or promises that they'll never see it again, they'll never be shown it again. That's not true. We know that they will, and we are naive.
Did. And we all yep. did.
And we're naive as parents if we think a one-off exposure is the last exposure. We must be ready for that. Have your child, make sure they have lots of other healthy activities to be involved in, that when they feel like they might want to click on something, they've got other places to go. And then parents must check the technology in their homes. We must have filtering software or use some of the Apple updates even to, you know, change the filtering of adult content onto kids' devices and kids' mm-hmm. phones. And then have a plan with your kids. For many of them, it could be when they're bored or they're tired or when mum's popped out to drop their brother at soccer. Talk with them about the times that they might feel like they're going to click on that. And then enlist support, particularly if you feel like you've discovered it's become compulsive for your child. That is a time you absolutely must step in and get some support, even professional support. Their brains are young, and it's very positive because there can be lots of changes that can be made in habits with young brains rather than trying to change habits when you're 30. So it's a good time to be really helping your child. But don't be in denial. Please, parents, don't be naive and think, not my child, because every child is going to be exposed.
It's 16 minutes to 11. You're listening to Jess Strutt on Focus, and we're talking to Colette Smart, psychologist, a teacher, mother of three. She's got a book, They'll Be Okay, which is, of course, hugely optimistic, and I love that. Talking about parenting teenagers, how to have those sort of what can be tricky conversations about all of the issues that affect teenagers these days. We've got a few texts in, so I'll just read a few out. As a matter of fact, I just told my young grandson that it would be nice to ring his auntie to thank her for the presents that she had sent. And he said, no, I'll just send a message on my computer. And I said, look, it would actually be nicer to talk to her. The auntie was pleased, and so was he. That's from Jackie in Innerloo. Jackie, that's a good one. I'm an
Beautiful.
Auntie. I love to get a phone call.
Yes.
Not a big fan of the text, so that's good. Now, what else have we got here? Here we go. I mean, this is a good one from Sebastian, and it really picks up on that issue we were talking about before. Oh, my goodness. Google the word sex. It's not a place for a child or a teenager to learn love, affection, birds and the bees. So that's right. There's a lot more access to information out there, but it's not necessarily access to the right answers and the right information, Colette.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I love that grandma's idea of calling the auntie. That comes back to values, doesn't it? Where you say to your kids, this is meaningful, and this is also teaching children they are love able, that they need to recognize others. So a call is meaningful to your auntie. So it's not just what works for you and because you want to send a text. That is, that will really mean something to her. And so that is what we do as a family. We call people, if that's what your family values are, you call people to thank them. So I love that child was nudged in that direction and they did it. And that's very important. I think, you know, values, I know there will be some listeners who, there will be teenagers going through some really, really hard times. And there can be periods of time where it can be 3 years for some families where their teenager just kicks against everything, every value, everything they're trying to instill in that child. I want to also give those parents hope. For those parents, it's important for you to get support or even professional help for yourself, just so that you can get through that period. Look after your other relationships and your other children, but know that the research on values says that many of those young people come back to their values once they've come out the other side. You've just got to hang on. And I don't mean that lightly, but it is a period that can be tough and you need to hang on. But if you keep with the values and keep with the expectations, they do come out the other side and they come back into the family fold, many of them again.
Presumably quite a bit of that would be sharing it with other, your experiences. And they can probably be a bit embarrassing when your kid has done something that you're embarrassed of, but sharing it with other parents and finding those supports through that.
Yeah, we've got to be so careful not to judge parents.
I have nothing but complete admiration for anyone who parents.
I'm so glad you say that, because there's so many times when we see families of three or four kids and then one child is completely rebellious. And, you know, the parents have done the same thing with all those kids, and kids are not machines. Kids do make choices. And that's where, you know, I talk about a chapter on choices and consequences. And some of those kids, the only way they learn is through painful consequences. And it's agonizing for those parents to watch. And those parents need support. They don't need judgment. They need people around them just to help them get through that time.
You write in the book about unconditional love, which is something that I just love unconditional love. It's the most important thing. And you say, when our children are wrapped in unconditional love, the concept of worth is soaked deep into their souls, which is just, it's so beautiful. And, you know, communicating to them, I suppose, that you're enough, you're fine, just as you are. How do you show unconditional love to children?
So, you know, whether your child's rebellious or not, unconditional love doesn't mean there's no consequences or no boundaries. So unconditional love is still within a relationship where there's boundaries or consequences if they step out of that or they do something against, you know, family ethics. But unconditional love means even when you do step out of those boundaries, I still love you and I still care for you and you still mean the world to me. And I might not like your choice or you might have hurt me, but I'm always here for you. And then we communicate unconditional love by, you know, I talk about love bomb days where we have...
I love those. I want a love bomb day.
I know. They're such fun days to, you know, for some parents, they take a bit of planning. They don't have to be lots of money, but
Explain it to people who might not have had a love bomb day. Can you explain?
So a love bomb day is a day in the year where you say to your child... we do lots of different things together in the year, but one day in the year, let's look at the calendar and that's your day. And from the time you wake up in the morning until the evening, you choose what we do. And you do it within your budget. So you could say, look, we actually can't spend money, but you can choose what food we can go pick up at the local supermarket. We'll go and make lunch and take it to wherever you choose. And you could go to the beach or whatever it might be. Some families say you can choose one paid outing, one takeaway meal, and then one non-paid event, and we fill the day up. But the child chooses. So it's not the parent choosing how to love the child. The child says, this is my love language. This is what makes me feel loved and how I will feel connected to you for the day. And that's what I would love to do for the day. And you plan it. And so that will change, you know, depending on if your child is 5 or 15. But some families, I know a dad of 6 and his kids still, you know, they some of them are finished school and they still love that time. They're at university and they still have their love bomb days.
And so, I think you just touched on something important there as well. It's learning your child's language of love, those love bomb days, because the languages of love are so important. And I mean, this great, that's obviously a very famous book, but understanding what it is that makes your child feel loved so that they are making the choice is just, you know, it's
and that's, yeah, and I think that's all wrapped up in love and unconditional love, where we're saying, I love you the way you want to be loved, not the way I tell you you should be loved. You know, obviously within boundaries and reason, but we really, I also talk about touch, how important touch is, and safe touch, touching our children. There's research that talks about love needs touch to make it real. And so finding ways to touch your children that they enjoy. So not forcing your child to hug you if they hate hugs. But for many children, they love a hug, or they love a squeeze on the arm, or their head being tickled, or anything, you know, that says this is the way that you experience love through touch. Ask your child what their touch language is as well, and do that to communicate to your child that they are special and important to you.
You're with Jess Strutt. We are talking to Colette Smart. She's got a book called They'll Be Okay. It's an optimistic look at how to parent teenagers in today's world. We've got a few texts coming in, so let's read some out because we love getting texts from you. The conversation here on Focus is always much richer with your input. We were talking about porn, so we've got a few, we have got a few texts in on that. We need to accept the fact that young females are exposed to porn and different conversations are required, from Rose. Exactly, Rose. I think that's a very good point. Porn is the theory, rape, misogyny, the objectification is the practice, from Xander in Double View. Thanks so much for sending those in. That was, you know, I mean, it was a lot of good advice there, and obviously there's more information out there on how to handle porn, but I think the main message Colette said is just take a big, deep breath when you do find out.
And that person's text about females being exposed, that's absolutely true. We have this notion that it's a boys' issue, and it's not a boys' issue. I think it's underreported by girls and women because they think they shouldn't, because girls and women don't see it or don't get exposed to it, and then that stops girls from speaking up. So thank you for that text, because that's a very important issue. I'm finding parents don't put checks or filters on their girls' phones, or don't have the conversations with girls, because they assume their daughters won't be exposed, and then 3-4 years down the line their daughter's got a serious issue with pornography because their parents have assumed it's not a girl's issue. So yeah, very important text that was.
And that's in terms of, because, you know, sometimes some of the behaviour that people may be seeing is then normalised when a woman, you know, a young girl may not be comfortable with that. And that's something that you touch on quite a bit in the book.
Yeah, so I mean, really what we're seeing in pornography is the majority of pornography that was assessed in some of the studies, that about 88% of the most popular videos or pornographic videos that were assessed show aggression and violence. And it's usually the person who is the victim of the aggression or violence in porn is usually a woman. And so what young people are learning through porn, when they are developing their ideas on sex and intimacy, they're learning that sex is aggressive, that it's okay to choke somebody or hurt somebody when you're having sex. And there's a lot of the messages, they're getting mixed messages about what sex or intimacy really is. I talk about some of the statistics on anal heterosex, and there's more girls that are the receivers of anal sex. In the studies, they say that the girls expect it to be painful, and so do the boys, and they expect it to not be very pleasant, but it's just what you do because that's kind of a new behaviour that they've learned is acceptable, and that comes out directly out of pornography.
Colette, sadly we're running out of time, but just to quickly, briefly sum up, what gives you hope?
What gives me hope is the energy of young people. I love that. I love the way they think. I love the way they just want to engage with the world. But what also gives me hope is this generation of parents. I think this generation of parents are more willing to be involved with their kids than ever. They want to have conversations with their kids. They want to engage in some of the difficult, more tricky topics. They just aren't always sure how. But I think this generation is doing a wonderful job, and we're seeing more dads involved than ever before with their kids, and it's wonderful to see. So I do have hope for this generation.
Colette Smart, thank you so much for joining me. I learnt a new word, and as we're talking about young teenagers and 20-somethings, I learnt a new word on the weekend. When they're referring to a song they like, they call it a banger. And this one was Triple J's Hottest 100 number one over the weekend, and it's a real banger, according to the young folk.